It's now 5:26, and we'd like to reconvene the meeting into open session, and we are under agenda item 3, and the meeting will be held in open session, not as posted in closed. And thank you, Tony. And with that, please proceed.
As we were saying,
Could you start off with this, just real quickly?
Inside your interview packets, the blue sheets is the BBFA local policy, which is a conflict of interest disclosure. And in the best interest, we want to keep this, you know, fair and impartial, so the policy is here for your review, and the affidavit is attached for anybody that might need.
Very good, thank you.
Do we need to actually?
Not unless you have, you feel you have a.
No, not the conflict of interest, the other stuff. Do we have to actually rate?
The packet includes copies of the questions for each firm. There is a score ranking down underneath each question, and just a place for you all to keep your notes. And may I remind you also to, your notes, to please keep them, you know, just as clean as possible.
And they're for your use, so if you don't want to circle something, you don't.
Right. Okay. And then at the end of the night, I have included a score sheet, and that would be tallied up at the end of the night.
And normally what we do is we do this together.
So, does anybody have any questions, comments, before we begin?
Does anyone want to clear any of this stuff, or is everybody happy with it?
We're gonna need it.
So I'll bring the first firm in, and just before we begin, we'll give them a few minutes to review the questions, and then.
I'll do an introduction. Well, who's the first firm?
Alvedres.
The first firm is Alvedres Architects.
Thank you. Doc, do you have a mixer pen? I don't know what I did with my.
I'll bring some.
There's one.
Not really.
Is it me? It's already hot in here.
Yeah, can we get some air in here, Doc?
Thank you, Tony.
Just down a couple degrees.
Maybe 2 degrees down?
No, she's got the refrigerator.
A pen.
Dr. Murphy, could you pass the pens to everyone, please?
How many more?
I have one. I don't know. Armando, do you have anything?
Hi, how are you? Damon Murphy, Superintendent.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Hello.
Hi. A lot about you. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, everybody.
Good evening. It's a pleasure.
Good evening.
Thank you so much. Good night.
So these are the hospitals.
These are the hospitals.
So you're gonna have to do it there.
Do we need to, can we hand out cards?
Sure. Although we have all your materials.
Go ahead, whatever you want.
Whatever you want.
Some people give our cards. Sometimes they throw them at us.
Dr. Murphy.
We need exhaustors.
We have. You want to have?
And, okay.
Thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for that. Again, no, for y'all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you for coming. Please have a seat.
We'll go around and introduce, but before we do, you have 7 questions in front of you to take down. Please do not write on the sheet. You can certainly write on the pad. You'll have exactly 20 minutes to go through, and we will ask them individually to you. After the 20 minutes, we will then, as time permitting, have a short discussion, a little more back and forth between the board and you guys.
And I would like for you to please give us an introduction. We can hear that on the recording, and everybody can hear exactly who you are.
Okay. You want us to do that now, or you want us to look at the questions now?
No, just our
introduction. Yeah, we'll show introduction.
Okay. Well, my name is Yvette Crone. I'm with Elvidris Architecture, and I'll be serving as the project coordinator for this project, which means a little bit of everything. Mostly, I'm the mom, the taskmaster, make sure everybody does what they're supposed to be doing, and really doing a little bit of support on interiors as well. But mostly, coordinating the project, acting as community liaison, working with the board, with the bond oversight committee, community presentations, etc. Make sure that your community is informed on what it is that the district is doing, and you know, proving to them that you're being fiscally responsible.
My name is David. I'm the design principal of Obvious Architecture. I will be involved in the project from inception through completion of construction, as well as the one-year review that we do on all of our projects. So I'll be responsible for design, and then as we proceed with our design, other staff gets involved once we get involved and get into the construction documentation phase. But I, as principal of the firm, will be, you'll see me all the time. I'll be very involved in this project.
Damon Murphy, superintendent of schools, been here 2 years.
Sergio Coronado, been a member since 2002 on the board.
Patsy Mendoza. I'm the newbie.
Laurie Searles, board president. It's a pleasure to have you all this evening.
Thank you very much. Thanks
for the opportunity. Armando Rodriguez, I've been on since 2005. I'm the second to old bit, not old.
And basically, no one lives a day over 18.
Right.
Especially me.
Monica Cáceres, and I've been on the board since November 2008.
Rachel Quintana, I'm the board.
And that's Juana Gutierrez, and she's representing Human Resources and kind of quarterbacking this board. So please take a minute, look over the questions, let us know when you're ready, and then we'll start with Rachel and go around from there. And please pace yourself as we start.
Over 20 firms with previous school design experience applied for this job, and you have been chosen as a finalist. What sets you apart from the field, and why specifically should we award you this special pre-K through 8 school design opportunity?
We are extremely proud of our portfolio of work, and we are privileged to be here with you this evening. And to know that out of 20 firms, you felt that we were one of the ones that you wanted to talk to. So thank you for your time and your consideration. In our history, we've been around for over 24 years. So we are not the new kids on the block. We bring a breadth of experience that maybe not everyone has. We've completed over 150 pre-K through 12 projects alone. And that doesn't include higher ed projects. Pre-K projects specifically, we have completed more than any other firm in the city because for 16 years, we did every single project of pre-K, Early Start, and Head Start for Region 19 Education Service Center. So we have a tremendous amount of experience. Within that, we have the passion that we love architecture and we love what we do. We really do see schools as a center of community life. It isn't just a phrase. It is true. It is where we all receive our beginnings, where we all come back together, and it's something that elevates our youth. In addition to that, we have a common sense approach, and we come in with no preconceived notions. Yes, we've done over 150 school projects, but that doesn't mean that those 150 projects are perfect for the gun with the UISD. That means that we have experience that we can build off of, that as we sit down and we listen to you and what it is that you say you need, we can then maybe pull from some of that experience and say, this has worked here for this reason, this worked there, and it didn't work for these reasons, and be able to afford you that insight so that you can make the informed decisions that you need to make. Something else that we do is a master plan and long-term approach. We are about building relationships. We don't want to come in and say, we're going to do one school from you and you're never going to talk about us again. You don't want to see us. Our clients, the EPISD, the East Led ISD, et cetera, are clients that we've had for 18 years. And you're not going to ask us back once, much less another 17 years worth, if we don't deliver what we say we're going to do. So as we come in and work with you, we want to make sure that we're really answering your needs. So we have this common sense approach. It's a collaborative fashion. We love what we do. We're a creative team. We're an innovative team. And
can I jump in?
And he's the boss.
But, you know, we love what we do. We're very design oriented. We've received a lot of design awards over the years. But really what it comes down to is we provide a service, and we understand that we provide a service. So we listen to our clients, and we have a lot of experience to bring to the table. But as Yvette mentioned, we don't start with any ideas. We don't do cookie-cutter type approaches. We will listen to what your needs are, we'll interpret your needs, and we love to collaborate with you. If the opportunity arises, we like to go through a design charrette process, which we did describe in our SOQ, in that we love to kind of establish a mini office, maybe in the administrative office at a campus, where we'll have 3 to 6 people actually design your project. I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but we love community-based design, where the community can get involved. Because once the community gets involved in a project, we always end up with successful projects. But really what sets us apart is our client. Our clients have been loyal to us for years and years. And it's all because of the service we provide. We can provide a great design, but we need to bring the project in on budget, and it needs to be very functional. But it needs to be exciting, where the kids, the staff, the faculty are just every day, they want to come to the school. And that's really what sets our firm apart.
And as we were mentioning on responsiveness, our firm policy is that we respond to any owner request within 2 hours. And that is, if you email us, if you call us, etc., we'll respond within 2 hours. If you need us to come out as a locally owned and operated firm, need us to come out, we can come out. We have that ability. But really, we see customer service as architecture is design, and it's a lot of beautiful things that we can wax poetic about. But at the end of the day, it's no different than if after this long evening you go out for a dinner and you want the server to bring you iced tea, either before you ask for it or as soon as you ask for it. You don't want to have to be asking for something 1, 2, 3, 5 times. That's what our approach is like. We really want to make sure that we serve our clients and serve our needs so that we can give you the facility that you need, because we know that money doesn't come easy.
Okay, next question.
How can great school architecture change a community? What current trends interest you regarding school architecture? And how do you work with the owners to create and build community-changing schools? Please share a memorable quote.
As I started to say a second ago, we believe in community-based design. And to where parents, again, the entire community gets involved in design of a project. And once a community takes a pride of ownership in a facility, I mean, it's just a very exciting dynamic process as far as the design process goes. And one of the perfect examples we'll share with you is the Tornillo High School that we completed, I guess, a year and a half ago. Just kind of very briefly, when we were awarded that project, we were asked to design a new middle school for them. They had a junior high and, well, actually no, an elementary school. They had a junior high and a high school. And then they asked us to build a...
intermediate school.
And the intermediate school. Let me get a little mixed up. Anyway, as we analyzed their site, we actually came back and said, why don't we go ahead and do your middle school, junior high, and we build a new high school. And we came up with a master plan for them, which actually they didn't ask us to do it, but we redid their entire campus, and then they saw the benefits in building the new high school. We worked very closely with the community. We had a lot of community-based presentations in both English and Spanish. It was, again, it's a dynamic process. And we ended up building a new high school, and what was really interesting about that school as well, when we talk about planning for the future and designing smart, versus what we've experienced a lot, and I think all of the school districts have, when you build a school, almost the day it's built, you're out of space. What we did with Tornillo, we actually built a wing, but strictly as a shell, to allow them to build, do the interior build out as, you know, they were able to either receive grants and so forth. And for example, in that wing, we did, I forget, it was two or three science classrooms already. So that whole process, this idea of community-based design, where we get administration, other administrators, faculty, staff, I mean, you know, facilities people, janitorial staff, everybody's involved, where they can kind of look over our shoulder and say, you know, that doesn't work. This is what we'd like you all to do. We have a lot of experience, but we don't think to be experts. I mean, actually, I don't like the word expert. We like to work with our clients. And
in terms of also making it memorable to them and memorable to us, as we were going through this master plan process and discussing with the district what was important to them and where their focus was currently, what their goals were. Their goals were, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with where Tornillo was a few years ago, they were going to get taken over by the state, and Mr. Branish has done an amazing job with his district. But what Mr. Brownish had in mind, what his board had in mind, was they really wanted to push education, but not just get a high school diploma. They wanted to push their kids to get a higher education. They wanted them to pursue a university collegiate level education. And so at that point, they wanted to create something. When we mentioned to them maybe that a high school would be more appropriate, that gave everyone the platform to say, okay, you know what, then let's give them something memorable and beautiful and amazing and something to aspire to, so that the younger kids say, I want to go to that school. I don't want to just go to this, I want to go there. And from there, I want to go there. And so it really started to work in tune with what the district was trying to achieve. They had programs, they were starting to implement programs, trips, reward programs, etc., to expose their students to other opportunities, and this school now aligned with that. In addition to that, ultimately, and I think the greatest testament to what the school became was the fact that the community calls the school La Universidad. For them, they call it the university. They don't call it the high school. They call it the university, so that it transformed the community in the sense that they've got pride and it gives them something to aspire to, but it achieved what they wanted and it supports the missions of the district. In terms of trends that interest us regarding school architecture, you know, in terms of sustainability, how can we use the school as a teaching tool? How can we teach the students? It's almost like it starts at home, it starts at school. How can we teach them environmental responsibility and sustainability? How does the building work? Can we put in a garden? Can we harvest rainwater?
And atypical,
you know, what kind of classrooms do you need? You're talking about pre-K through 8th. Do you want to start to prepare the older kids for changing classrooms? Do you want to change up furniture so that maybe they work more in a conference table setup? Do you take away the typical desks and let them sit on balls, which is something that we've seen some school districts do? I know that sounds goofy, Dr. Markey, but some of them feel that at that key point it keeps them, you know, those kind of big yoga balls, it keeps them abreast or a little more aware. And so there's things that are out there that we can do that we're open to help really listen to what your staff needs and make sure that we implement those into the design so that your teachers have the functional tools that they need to get the job done.
Dr. Murphy, there's about 8 minutes remaining.
So. Okay, we'll talk to you fast.
How about we? Should we just let them answer the question, or do you want to ask them the question?
I think we need to go on, move quickly on to the next question.
Okay, in terms of number three, if I may proceed, we are very involved. We've won 42 design awards at the state, local, and regional level, inclusive of TASB awards. Several of our projects have been recognized. This year, a project that we did for EPCC, the Administrative Services Building B, was recognized as Outstanding Renovation of the Year. That isn't even a category that they give a prize in. They were just so impressed with our project that they gave us awards in the five levels, the value, the process of planning, educational appropriateness, etc. But they were so impressed with it, they made it Outstanding Renovation of the Year. Eastwood Middle School, a 7th and 8th grade campus that we did for EPISD, has also been recognized in three categories. And the John Uxer Head Start Learning Facility in Telesium that we did for Region 19, that won in every five category, in each of the five categories, and lost by 1 point for the Cogdill Award, which was a killer to know that we lost by 1 point. So we definitely see the value, and we feel that our designs achieve the criteria that our clients need, but also that a design award-winning criteria that you all are looking for to make sure that you receive the recognition that you do. So,
and we're totally committed to it. So if the district is looking for whether it's silver or gold, we'll work very closely with you to attain that particular level. And I think that's very important.
And okay. if you do not have the money to pursue LEED, we will still incorporate sustainable design elements that we have been incorporating for the last 20 years because it was a responsible and smart thing to do.
Let's go to number four.
Okay. Should we just jump in?
Okay.
I mean, we totally agree that, again, the combo school, the separation and safety of the students are very critical, the younger kids versus the older kids. But, again, we still believe very strongly that there should be a very strong identity for the school. We feel it's so important for students to be able to identify and be very proud about saying, that's my school. And so we, again, welcome this opportunity to design your pre-K to eighth grade school with that type of philosophy in mind. I think it's absolutely critical. And again, the sharing of facilities can be done in such a way that, again, we meet the needs of the younger kids as well as the older kids.
Any experience?
With true combo schools, we have done additions to them, but we haven't done a ground up.
Okay.
We've done the campus type school, you know, somewhat like Tornia, where we had the three, but in separate buildings, not in a combined fashion.
Okay.
And I think one of the things that's very important there in the design is the ability, again, with LEED and utilizing outdoor spaces for the students to allow natural light into the classroom, but then having these outdoor spaces that tie everything together, whether the school is designed in some way or a village-like fashion, kind of this teaching village. But there's a lot of different things from a design standpoint that we can do.
Go on to five, please.
Okay, philosophy and practice. I think we spoke to that a bit related to design programming. That's really the basis of everything that we do, to truly understand what your programming needs are and what the visions of the district are for your particular project. And again, hopefully understand what the expectations are of the community as well, to where it really is an all-encompassing collaborative approach to the project. Because once that program is established, that really does provide the foundation from which we design.
And programming really will be inclusive of the board, of administration, of facilities, and then the teachers, you know, the educators that you would like to include. And we would even welcome including students in the process, in that programming phase. and in the charrette phase, if we were to be, you know, able to go forward. And we do different things. We like to be within your facilities or on your campus for as many days as possible, from 3 to 5 days. And at that point, we'll do things like play the dot game. Okay, what's important to you? Let's put up big banners on the walls of things that are important to you. And everybody gets 3 little dots. Put them where you think it's important. You know, that type of thing. CM at Risk?
Okay, CM at Risk, we've done many projects with CM at Risk, type of delivery method. And we like it because, again, the contractor becomes part of our team. And if it's a good CM at Risk, it's a great process. Again, I would have to say, at the end of the day, our responsibility is to the district. We're always looking out for the district's interests. But it's very important that the CM at Risk is part of the team. And it becomes a collaborative approach. Our construction documents actually don't change. We're still as thorough as we can be. And over the years, our change order rate is way below the industry average. We put together a great set of documents, and that's why we get so much repeat work from compliance. But this is a good delivery method that we're all for.
Industry average is 6% architectural and engineering change orders. We have less than 1% architectural engineering change orders on our projects. And that's something that we've been tracking for the last 8 years. So it's something we take a lot of pride in, and we always have a solid set of drawings that you can go back to when you need to.
This last question.
This last question is, I'm gonna answer it. We haven't had the privilege of working with you in the past, and we want to. We know that the big glamour project in your bond items is the pre-K through 8 campus, but not everything is a glamour project. There are other things that are needed to make sure the school works, that it functions, and because a school is more than just a classroom. There's transportation facilities, there's band rooms, there's breezeways, there's parent drop-offs, there's a little bit of everything. We have extensive experience in additions and renovations and the special considerations that it takes when working with the school in an occupied facility. You know, at that point, if the school is still open, it's not like you're going to close down your school because we're going to add a new gym to it. We need to make sure that things are done, safety and security is maintained, that Texas accessibility standards, ADA compliance is maintained, that you don't do things like, we're just gonna turn off the electricity today and so everybody can hang out in the dark. You know, all of those things, utility outages, make sure that they're well coordinated. How are you gonna get through campus? How are you gonna route your waste off of your campus? All of those things are things that we have done for a long time. Not everything that we've done is new construction. We've done our fair share of additions, renovations, modernizations, and so we have the experience and our consultants have the experience to do this. And in addition, one thing about our consultants is that we have a seamless relationship with all of our consultants. We know who our project team is because we've worked with them not on one or two or three projects in the past. We've been working with them for a decade. And so they know what to expect from us, they know what our demands are, and we know what we can expect from them.
Over the years, we've had numerous open-end contracts where districts will just hire us on an on-call basis. And we've done the kitchen additions, kitchen renovations, HVAC replacement, the gymnasiums. We've done the projects that you've listed that are under your bond program. So yes, as Yvette mentioned, I mean, we all would love to do a ground-up building. But any project that you all would consider us for, we will provide the same level of service. And, you know, your HVAC replacement project, district-wide, that's going to be a tough project. But we've done our fair share of them. And so, again, we just welcome the opportunity to be able to work with you and hopefully establish a long-term relationship. That's really what we're all about. We're not looking for just one of your projects. We'd like to work with you for the next 20 years.
Thank you. That's excellent. There's 10 minutes left.
Okay.
Four questions from the board.
Yes, sure. Ma'am.
Rachel, Monica, who would like to? Armando.
Well, one of the things that I guess, you know, with all the new technology going about, on, especially on the design phase, what are you all able to offer, and how would that benefit either the district.
From a design construction document standpoint, like our services that we provide?
Building information,
whatever.
Anything the district would require. I mean, we've always prided ourselves on keeping up to date with software and hardware. So we, as far as like during the design process, we do 3D models. We actually have a 3D printer that we do a design, and the printer will build your building three-dimensionally. I mean, we stay on top of all this. We can do, again, the renderings. We can do the walkthroughs, the flybys. I mean, I'd have to say most firms do that. Not too many firms have a 3D printer, but we feel that's part of it. That's a great design tool. And I mean, it's one thing to see a great rendering, but when you can actually see your facility in three dimensions where people can hold it, touch it, feel it, makes a world of difference. So from a technology standpoint, I mean, I think we're up to speed on anything that we use for as a design tool, but also enhances our construction document process to assure that we've got a very tight set of drawings that are well coordinated with all of our consultants.
And implementable in the field. Because at the end of the day, a firm can put together a set of drawings, and if you can't put them, actually use them, if your GC and your CM members can't use them in the field, it didn't do anybody any good. And if 5 years from now, 20 years from now, you say, I want to make an addition, and nothing is in its place, that doesn't do any good either. So those are things that we can do in terms of graphics and rendering. We do have graphic artists on staff, which is a little bit different than most firms. I venture to tell you, we're probably the only ones in town that do have a graphic artist, but that also comes into play because those flybys and 3D models, etc., really come into play when presenting to the community, because it will come to a point where, you know, we've worked within bond programs in the past, working with the bond oversight committee, and then the school board, but those community presentations to make sure that everybody knows what's going on, and those are always nice tools. You know, they're a little differently versed than you all. You all understand the design and construction process, and the general community may not. And for them to be able to see those pretty pictures, so to speak, really helps you tell your story.
I have a question. You understand we have X amount of money.
Yes.
We have a set budget, mm-hmm. and that you must work within the budget. You cannot design a school for us and then go, oh, it's nice, everybody right. wanted it, right. and everybody's got the vision, man, too bad you can't
right.
afford it.
Right.
And we are left with the skeleton wing
exactly.
because
exactly.
you do understand we have parameters and you must design within those.
We're very much aware of that. And what, you know, with your construction manager at risk, that's nice having them on board, because that's one of their responsibilities, is to be doing cost projections mm-hmm. during the design and different phases of the contract document phase. Even though we have a CM at risk on board, we will still be doing our own estimates. So that's a great check and balance. And that's one of the things that we're very proud of. We do bring our projects in on budget. I mean, for example, we just bid a project yesterday for the city of El Paso, a pretty large project, but now we're going into construction. So this project would be perfect timing for us. It was an approximate, we had, I think our estimate was $32 million. All the bids came in underneath our budget, our last estimate, and all the bids, we had 8 bidders, but they were within 4 to 5% of each other. Great range of numbers, and we really pride ourselves on that. The last thing we want is to have come in and say, okay, you've got a $10 million project, it costs $15, and we all sit around the table and none of us are happy.
Yes.
So again, to assure that you all will call us back on your next bond issue, we will. It's hard to say we'll guarantee, but I can assure you, your project will come in on budget.
Okay.
Well, and we understand, it goes back to being fiscally responsible. The voters, the community, has entrusted you with this task, and we want to make sure that you fulfill the promises that you have made to your community. And so 95% of our projects are on time, and 91% of our projects are on budget. We wish we could tell you that we were perfect and it was 100% all the time, but that's not real life. What we can tell you is that we're going to bust our humps to do it right, and we're going to do our best to make sure that you get the most bang for your buck, that we can incorporate sustainable design elements within your budget, and that that project creates long-term value for the district, where we really protect your interests.
You know, kind of, we talked about earlier about the programming. That's what's critical, where everybody buys into the program mm-hmm. at some point in time, so we don't have what we call the scope creep. Mm-hmm. Where we have a meeting and then this group wants this, and then they have another meeting, this group wants that. That's where you begin to lose track of budget. So I think it's very critical that we maintain that oversight. And that initial document is really very critical. I mean, it's an organic document. We understand it will change. But we need to make sure that, again, 2 months into the project, it, you know, again, an 80,000 square foot facility hasn't grown to 120,000.
And that it's a realistic document.
Yeah.
Because at that point, we don't want to say, dream huge, and you say, well, you know, one classroom for five students, well, that's not ever going to work. So we want to make sure that it's a realistic document that everyone signs off on so that we can design to it.
Thank you. Any other questions, Patsy?
What do you feel is the feasibility of incorporating solar into, at this point in time, in the stage of development of the solar industry is to, for this project?
It's something we definitely need to look into. Again, with rebate programs, again, for some reason, you know, this our region has been a bit behind with even the electric company. They've changed some of their regulations recently. We did solar for this project with the city, but we did it as an alternate. Now, we did a life cycle cost analysis to illustrate to the city what their payback is going to be. And part of it was that with sustainability, and we've always designed in a sustainable fashion, but now with the certifications and so forth, it's, you know, become more, I mean, it's an everyday term now, green architecture and sustainability. But also, there's another aspect to it, and it's just marketing. Again, it's just being able to illustrate to the community that we're all being good stewards and designed in a proper fashion. And so solar, as well as wind, you know, there's different technology with wind now. I think those are some technologies that we should analyze and evaluate, and then jointly make a decision if that's something the district would like to pursue, and or if there may be some grant monies available at some point in the future to where they can be incorporated into your project. There's a lot of different things that are going on now.
And wind is great because they've now started to make the smaller turbines.
Yeah.
Now they're not just the monster ones that you see, you know, further out kind of on your way to Dallas type of thing. They're now on a smaller scale, so they're much more affordable for projects of this scale and will still give you the payback that you're looking for. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can still get that bang for your buck, be environmentally responsible, reduce your long-term costs, because that's something else. You know, you need to design it for today, but you need to make sure that you can maintain that facility for the long term. And if it costs you a whole lot of money in the long term to maintain it, it doesn't. You want to make sure you have a good return on your investment.
Thank you very much. Time's up.
And
yes, it was fast,
like,
but we've got a very long, very long, an arduous task before us. We thank you so much for interviewing. Thank you for your enthusiasm.
You know, the opportunity.
Absolutely.
You know, thank you so much for your time. Well, thank you. And you all had some really good questions.
You did.
And you answered very well. Thank you. Your enthusiasm is
marvelous. We brought you candy. We figured you guys.
Oh,
I guess you guys already have your, like, full on. And actually, I have to tell you, sitting in the waiting room, I guess they brought you all dinner, and so we could smell.
And our students made it.
They did?
Like,
thank
it smelled
good.
Like, very
good. It smelled really so good.
Thank you.
It's like we're sitting here letting our mouths water.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, sir. Excellent.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
appreciate
so
it.
Thank you so much.
It's good to see you again.
Nice to see
thank you.
You
so
I know,
much.
I only saw, like, some of you guys at Timothy.
Merry Christmas, and thank you very
Merry
much.
Merry Christmas. Maybe Santa will bring me a project.
I like that.
No, let's see.
Go down the hall. There's a naughty list. As long as you're not on there.
Is the other firm here?
Yeah, have we had the other firm? Thank you. Dr. Murphy. Who's next?
It's a graphic.
Doesn't count.
Poking out somebody else's water. I've got.
Where's the next?
Oh, you got some. Well, you got her water.
When I picked up water and somebody had opened it.
I had. She didn't remember. She didn't. All
right.
And did you tell her to come? What? Yeah, they're coming. They're coming.
What's next, guys? PBK.
And Damon Lundy, Superintendent.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, sir.
Where would you like us?
Right there and...
Sitting?
Yes, sir. Whatever you're comfortable with.
I'll have a seat. Okay.
And we do have some rules. We'd like you to introduce yourself.
Okay.
We've got 20 minutes for y'all to answer these questions, 7 questions.
Okay. Take down in front of you there.
And you'll read them. We'll give you a little, you can start reading them as,
okay.
You can start right now. Okay. You can listen.
Yeah, we'll take a couple minutes. Just go through them.
Go through the questions. Please let us, you know, we'll give you 3 to 4 minutes to do that. And then you have 20 minutes to answer these questions and then 10 for us to ask you some questions.
Okay. Great.
And we'll kind of, if you get to running over on these, I may give you a sign that, you know, we've got
just get the big
on.
Hook and yank.
Yeah.
I'll get it. Got to
move.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Well, I guess we can.
No, feel free. Read
them. Yeah, go ahead. Feel free.
We won't start. Take your time.
Okay.
I will let you know when there's 10 minutes remaining and then maybe 5 minutes.
Okay. Secret.
So, first question. Please address.
Okay, well, first of all, my name is Joel Hernandez. I'm a partner with PBK Architects.
My name is Raul Yanap. I'm an associate with PBK. I'm also the director of our PBK El Paso office.
Great. We're the Canyon Fiesta School Board. It's a pleasure to have you here this
evening. Thank you for having us. We certainly appreciate the opportunity. On your first question regarding what sets us apart from the field and why specifically should you award this special project of a pre-K through A school design opportunity, I think one of the things that I think sets us apart is basically our depth in terms of qualified individuals. Not only do we have qualified individuals here locally that could be here at a moment's notice, but more importantly, we have in our offices across, we have 10 different offices, over 150 employees. Within those 150 employees, we have a slew of different experts, everything from educational experts to building envelope experts, design experts, all those kinds of things. So we're able to bring you a wealth of knowledge, not only from what is happening here locally, but we can also bring a wealth of knowledge of what's happening on a statewide basis. So we're able to provide you everything from what a Santa Gertrudis with 400 students is doing all the way to a Sci Fair with 95,000 students, because we've done work for both of those. So we're able to provide you those opportunities, and you're able to take advantage of some of the things that a larger district may have more resources to do. Well, we can become that extended resource for this district and provide you all of those things, everything from doing school tours to giving you different educational models. Our office, as partners and managers within our corporate environment, The conferences we attend are actually the conferences you guys go to. TASB, NSBA, all those types of conferences. We don't really attend the AIA conferences or any of the architectural conferences, because what's important to us is to really understand what's happening in your business, because your business is what's important to us. So we want to know what are the new student models, teaching models, those kinds of things, and we attend all of those workshops so that we can kind of keep a pulse on what's going on. So I think one of the big differentiators, aside from the fact that we have a depth in teams, is that we're able to share all those experiences, things that have worked, things that haven't worked, things we would do differently, and really have that opportunity to kind of borrow from lessons learned from other districts. And more importantly, you're able to see all of these different models of things that are people are doing differently, and kind of kick the tires, talk to principals, talk to teachers. I can sit here and tell you how great our schools are all day, but what I would really prefer is for you to talk to our clients and have them tell you, because they're the ones that are in there day in, day out. As far as our design philosophy, we're very hands-on, but we see ourselves more as facilitators. So we're not here to give you a PBK school. There is no such thing. What we want to know is find out what your challenges are, what are your goals, and then coming up with a design in a very collaborative environment, whether it's with this board or with the design committee, and involve those stakeholders so that at the end of the day, we end up with a design that is truly kind of Theo's design and not a PBK design. We will bring you that wealth from...
With that, let's go to question two.
Okay. absolutely. I think some of the current trends that we see in architecture are just kind of a more sensitivity to materials, and I know there's another question down the line regarding green architecture. But there's a different sensitivity to materials, and obviously what we try to do is use materials that are vernacular materials to the area, that are indigenous, so that cost goes down in terms of shipping. I mean, we don't want to bring material that has to be brought in from Houston or Dallas. If we can use a similar material that's probably more adequate and more readily available in the area, we'll use those type of materials. So we tend to do that to not only keep a pulse on maintaining our cost down, but also to try to have them blend into the community. It's important for us to build schools that are reflective of the community that they're in. We don't want it to look like it fell out of the sky and it belongs in Houston or Dallas, when in fact, you know, it's here. So that's an important thing to us. Do you want to touch on any of the other things that you made?
Yeah, absolutely. I know as part of the example, I know it's a little bit part of question three in regards to the lead. We just finished up a project here in town, did by elementary over on the east side of town. Very reflective of, you know, of a great school architecture, including a lot of the regional materials. You know, we're talking about keeping that cost down. LEED actually, as part of some of their criteria, you know, we've got recycled materials, we've got regional materials. So absolutely, that is a great example, I think, and that sets in very well with the community. I know we've gotten very great response from the community about that. So I think that's a really, really great example.
Right. Another example that comes to mind is one that's actually in there. It's pre-K through 8 that we did for Santa Gertrudis. And Santa Gertrudis hadn't built a school or actually any real buildings on the ranch, because the district is basically comprised of the King Ranch. So they're, I think, the only school district in the state of Texas that can control their population, because if they want to get rid of students, they just fire the parents and all of a sudden they've got rid of students. So they're kind of in a unique environment. But obviously everybody's familiar with the King Ranch. It's got a rich tradition. It's just a wonderful place. So we were very respectful in regards to the architecture when we were given that opportunity to do a school there. So we borrowed from some of the characteristics of some of the older buildings of the main house, as well as the carriage house and some of the other buildings that were there. And we developed a design that was reflective architecturally, have it be sensitive to those cues. But more importantly, we also wanted to blend in the rich culture of the King Ranch and the rich heritage of the family. So we have those cues. So it was kind of a school as well as a museum almost. And we were able to incorporate, even in our atrium, some large photographs that were taken back in the 30s. So we took them, enlarged them, and they're regular photographs. We enlarged them, supersized, and put them throughout, so they're of the cattle drives and of those things, and it really helps the students understand the rich heritage of the ranch that their parents work in, that they live in, and that's part of their community. So that's a great example. As a matter of fact, our library has a hearth in it, so it's more like a living room. Doesn't have an actual fireplace, but it has a hearth in there. So it's more of a very kind of down home. So they'll have guest readers. Matter of fact, I know one of the ones that they're talking about bringing in is Laura Bush to come in and read to the children. But they'll have guest readers come in. That's where they sit in this rocking chair. Students sit on the ground, and they're just kind of in this wonderful environment that is some of the rich tradition of the thing. As a matter of fact, we use some of the old railings that we found on the ranch and had them cleaned up, powder coated, and we used them as decoration as within the walls of the school. So those are the kind of things that we try to do, is blend in the culture. As I will mention, even in the elementary school, is the local culture, and try to blend in those things in visual cues.
Okay, let's go to question three.
Yes, this pertaining to the lead recognition. You know, like I mentioned a little while ago about Del Valle, we are actually in the process of certifying that project for lead. We should be able to receive that here in the next several months. So, you know, obviously incorporating a lot of sustainable site type of strategies, utilizing what is currently, I guess, on site, utilizing that to. You know, to obviously be very sensitive to a lot of the kind of green architecture, a lot of the lead criteria that we're need to be a part of and obviously sustain. So,
There's also, you know, if you're not familiar, there's also CHIPS, which is the Collaborative for High Performance Schools, which is another green initiative. The difference between the two, as a matter of fact, the lead for schools was built off of the CHIPS model. They borrowed a lot of their components. The significant difference between the two, and we can go either way, is that the Collaborative for High Performance Schools, or CHIPS, is more about improving test scores. It has two goals. One is to improve test scores, and the other is to improve teacher retainage. So, but if in terms of how you apply them, they're very similar to each other, but one is has a different goal than the other. But we've used them both successfully in different schools. And as Raul mentioned, Devi is on its way to getting LEED certified. And then we have others that are CHIPS certified. And then we have some that are both CHIPS and LEED. So it's just a matter of what the preferences are and the cost associated with each one of those, how you want to pursue them. And as far as how we feel about pursuing awards, you know, awards is something that's very important to us because it's important to our clients. We don't seek them, we don't design with that intent, but we certainly know what makes us successful to get those awards. And we've been very fortunate over the years to having received over 260 of those design awards for TASB as well as NSBA and some of those others. So that's something that's important to us because it's important to our clients. As a matter of fact, the very first award we got was because a client asked us, hey, would you guys submit our project? And we do. So we have a group that's somewhat dedicated as those deadlines come closer, and we identify the ones that we think, you know, have a good potential because of their uniqueness, and then we'll go ahead and develop the PowerPoints and all the required documentation boards to submit for those. And we've also received in the past the Caudill Award in our firm. So that's something that we've been proud of and certainly work to attain. But as a matter of fact, Dr. Zolkowski has already let me know that, you know, we need to submit that, and that's actually one of our targeted schools that we will be submitting for TASB as well as probably NSBA to try to get a national award as well. So.
And to the first portion of that question?
Smart growth?
No, pre-K-8.
Is there a stability pre-K through the grade and state recognition?
Yeah.
Okay.
They answered.
Okay.
Yes. Then let's go to four.
Okay.
Excuse me, gentlemen, you have about 9 minutes.
9 minutes. Okay. So we'll move. Yes. One of the things that we try to do is to develop somewhat of a house concept for some of these schools when we do a pre-K through eight. And typically what we want to see, or what we find educators telling us they would like to see, is basically having a pre-K through fifth grade wings on one end,
with all of the common spaces, cafeteria, library, gymnasium, administration in the middle, and then 6th through 8th happen on the opposite side, so that basically you could take half that school and say this is one school, and then you could take the half, and the shared half is the part that kind of gets shared, but the other portions work independently, and that way those students aren't really crossing. And that helps kind of maintain some separation. We certainly recognize that if I have a pre-K student in that school, I don't want him hanging around with 8th graders. So that separation is important. But sometimes the model changes depending on what our clients tell us they'd like to see, because sometimes we'll actually see the 5th through 8th as a separate, and pre-K through 4th being the model. So those are just some of the strategies you can use to help do that separation. And then we've also separated them sometimes vertically, where the second floors are the older kids and the first lower level floors are for the smaller children, depending on what the site implications may be, depending on where the school's being built. So there are a number of ways to do that very effectively, and we certainly have experience doing that. Once again, we can show you what the different models are, show you the plans, or we could go and visit those facilities so you can see them for themselves or how they work.
Okay, and let's go to 5.
All right. Design program. Well, as I mentioned or touched on earlier, the programming is the important part. I mean, we need to know what it is you want. And once again, we can bring you different programs and share what others are doing and basically work our way backwards. But we strongly believe that the quality, the budget, and the size, if you can imagine those as three separate bubbles, are the three bubbles that you want to maintain relatively balanced. When any bubble, whether it's the programming because of size or the budget isn't appropriate or the quality is maybe not what it should be or the expectation is too high and it gets out of proportion, it can affect the project. So the idea is to come in, once again, act as your facilitator and help find out what strengths and weaknesses you have in your current facilities, what strengths and weaknesses you see in other facilities, and then develop some goals and develop a program that mimics and is reflective of those goals, so that at the end of the day we know whether we've been successful or not. If we don't ever know what we're trying to accomplish, it makes it difficult to measure. So it's important to have something to measure to. But we have the ability to have educational specialists come in and help us with all that programming, as well as bring you a slew of programs that you can see what others are doing if you're interested in that, or you may already know what you want. And if that's the case, then we can just refine the current program you have.
Okay, and to 6.
Well, we've done quite a bit of construction management at risk. We were actually one of the first architects to get involved in doing that. And we've done a lot of work, everything from small projects to very large projects, $100 million plus projects. And what we have found is it's important to stick to the model of construction manager at risk. Often what we find is that districts are actually hiring a construction manager at risk, but actually doing a project as a cost plus. And by that I mean is it's important to bring a CM early on the project so that they become part of that solution and part of that collaborative process that helps us develop this project. But more importantly is holding them accountable for providing us a GMP early enough in the project so that we're not waiting to the end. Oftentimes what we see is they'll wait to the very end till we're finished with documents. They'll bid the project and go, oh, we're over budget. Well, that's not what you want to hear, and that's certainly what I don't want to hear. And at that point, all of a sudden, we find ourselves just chopping a building to try to get it within cost. And that's not fair to you guys, and it's not fair to anybody. So it's important to get everybody to buy in on the project, get them involved early so that they have a say. But it's important to get that pricing early so that if there needs to be any changes, they're done while the building is still on paper and while everybody is still, it's still early enough that we can make those changes. So it's important to have those parameters set forth early, but we're a big supporter of it. It worked very effectively, and we've had a lot of success with it.
And 7.
Yes. Absolutely, we have interest in you know, for us, there is no such thing as a small project or a small client. And once again, as I started off with, I welcome you to call our clients, whether it's Mary Springs in Santa Gertrudis or Dr. Folks in at Northside. They will tell you that if you call us, we answer the phone, and whatever problem you have,
becomes our problem the moment we know about it. I just got a call from Mr. Chapman in Comfort ISD for a project we did back in 2007, and there was an issue with some drainage that the neighbor was complaining about, and he says, I know you guys submitted all the paperwork. Do you have that? And I said, I think we do. It's somewhere in the files, but it's in our storage room. Let me find it. And literally by 1 o'clock that same day, he had all the documentation he needed that he had submitted and gotten approvals from the county, and we sent it to them, and that was just yesterday. So I would welcome you to call him and ask him. But that was totally out of the blue. Hadn't talked to him in a while. But he was extremely happy, and it's just, I think, a reflection of how we work. So even though there's no money there, that's not our issue, and obviously paperwork have been transmitted at some point to the district or not, once we know a client has a problem, it becomes our problem, and we work very hard to try to take those problems on and be part of the solution, because we want to not only come here to do one job, hopefully, but to do multiple jobs down the line and develop a relationship, and that's what's really important to us. So.
Okay, and with that, we would like to now...
Did I make it?
Yeah, you have a minute. Do you want to say, you have 1 minute, do you want to use it?
No, I'll give it to you guys, so you can ask some questions.
Rachel?
I'm fine.
Monica?
No, I'm fine.
Armando?
Locally, have you, or in the region, have you built any prepaid through any?
No, just the elementary school that we have.
Right. So, what have you done pre-K through 8?
We've done one in Santa Gertruda, Gertrudis. We did one in Pawnee ISD. We did one in...
Yeah, this is actually a good opportunity. We actually got some relative projects as well in here.
I have a question.
You know,
as we're looking at these,
It's not a model that you find commonly in a lot of the in districts, although some of them seem to be shifting in that direction as a trend. So we have a handful. I know there's some in Houston area that we've done that I wasn't part of directly, but that we've done.
Sergio, would you? That's
I hope that answered your question.
Okay. Yes. And Sergio? Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I see you're doing one in actually Houston ISD.
Yes. Like I said, that seems to be a model that is developing as an opportunity. I think before it was, you know, that separation was what was important, and now there's this smaller community type schools that incorporate. I think the philosophy is that if you're able to make a connection with students by knowing their name and knowing how they are, that they don't get lost in the shuffle from elementary school to middle school and then middle school to high school. And we all know that middle school is the tough age for students. So I think by keeping them in one facility where they know them for a longer period of time and on a first name basis, and if they have special needs or wants, the teachers are all there that have had them throughout the years, and they're able to make those connections. So I think from the standpoint of this district, I think it's a good move, because I think it's a trend that we'll be seeing more and more of as districts try to improve those connections with students.
I have a question. I see you incorporate, I looked at your designs, and you incorporate a lot of natural light.
Yes.
And I like that about your presentation. But how do you, in terms of this area, in terms of, is that, in, I guess, how could you would address the energy efficiency because of all the natural light you use in terms of...
Right. Well, we have active systems and we have passive systems that help us maintain those costs. An active system, for example, would be sensors in corridors or classrooms that allow the lights to turn off if there's enough light coming in from the outside to maintain a proper level for students to work. A more passive type system would be maybe a screen. And if you were to go to Del Valle, you'll see that we have louvers and screens over the windows depending on which direction they're facing, so that we don't get that direct heat necessarily. We get some of the light, but we minimize the impact of the heat gain inside the building, those kinds of things. So what's important is to not just put glass all over the place, but to use it smartly. So you'll see in almost every design, I can't think of one off the top of my head of the 100 schools we've done,
any of them that have a library or an art room facing south. They're all facing north because we want nice clean light. We don't want to put blinds. We don't want to have to put louvers. But the sun can't hit a building if you're facing north. So it's a way of getting all this nice clean light without having a direct impact on how that building is going to function, or more importantly, how much you guys are going to have to pay for utility costs. So we're very sensitive to those things. It's not about putting glass for the sake of putting glass. It's using it smartly. And once again, we have those lead experts as well as design experts, and we all know what we need to be doing, but it's always good to have that expert whose sole job it is to bring the best that we can bring to a job. And every job is different. I mean, these are all, even when we duplicate a school, it's still a single machine that's being built one time. And that's important to have that expertise there.
Okay, that's it.
Is that time's up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Time's up.
Sorry, I shouldn't talk too much.
That's right.
You did an excellent job.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity, and good luck tonight.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we have a long night. Thank you. We don't need to cut you short.
No.
We are certainly interested. Can I say local offices on Kansas Street?
Yes, ma'am. We're in the Wells Fargo building.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Have a nice evening.
Thank you so much.
Merry Christmas.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Do you want
these back? Yeah, do you want these? No, those are yours.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah,
that's
a couple.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tony, next people.
Dr. Murphy just went to get them.
Okay. King Ranch one.
I'm sure that probably.
Can we take a
flavor?
Sure.
Well, we could. We're going to.
I think we should go see some facilities.
Yeah. Everyone, dimensions are great.
Hi, Al. How are you doing? Al,
how are you? How are you, sir? How are you?
I'm
a pleasure. Good to see you again.
Thank you, sir.
Great pleasure, Larry Searles. Merry Christmas.
How are you?
How are you?
You guys have a lot of information.
How are you?
Give me those plates, Mike.
Pleasure to meet you. What would you like? Good.
We have got a real strict timetable to adhere to. Y'all have some 7 questions actually before you that we would like you to answer, and I will keep you on track. Our administrative staff here will really keep you on track. She's got the best. But you may see me give you this, or you know, just interrupt and move. Yeah, interrupt and move you on, and it's in the you know, just truly respective of time. And after your 20 minutes, then we'll take 10 minutes to ask you some questions. Okay. And with that, please take 4 or 5 minutes to view the questions we've set before you.
You take notes on the thing, but don't write on the tape down piece. Okay.
Thank you.
you feel ready?
Yes.
Okay. Let's start with number one and okay. Timer's run.
I think what sets Dimension Search apart from the other firms is that we are a firm that has been reorganized. Recently, in the last few years, we merged with a firm from Houston, which brought to us a great deal of resources to be able to allow us to provide to our clients. One of the biggest things that I think the challenges that we had as a firm in El Paso was that we didn't have the resources available to us that are out there. And I say out there in the architectural design community. Now with the association through PNW Architects LLP, we've been given those resources. We are now a firm that has 9 lead AP professionals, over 12 registered architects, a staff that we can share simultaneously with Houston, and on the ground in El Paso, we vary between 8 to 12 people at a time, and we're able to do much more as an architectural firm in design, in the process, and how we deliver the work. And we have a philosophy, and one of the philosophies that I share and is in common with PNW Architects is that every project has partnership, a partner is involved throughout the whole process. You see us here now, you'll see us through the whole process. We eliminate the learning curve of trying to get an intern involved in trying to do the work that really a partner should be doing, or a registrar architect, project manager, person with experience. And I think that's what eliminates errors. Another one of the great things that we do as a firm is that we strongly believe that our drawings should be superb and should be above anybody else, and we try to eliminate and reduce our errors. We actually contract with a third-party reviewer that's out of California, it's PCN Associates, and about 95% complete with our drawings, we send them out to them, and they tear them apart, they go through them, and ensure that they catch many mistakes, inconsistencies, or anything we can have. We get them back, and that last 5%, we use it to make sure that our project is as complete as possible to eliminate errors. What that does is, as you well know, in construction, it saves time, it saves money, and it allows us to, to look good with everybody, and give you the client a much better outlook on it.
And let's go to the second question now.
Okay. Well, I can tell you one of the key components in terms of making the community proud is that your community needs an embrace and be in favor of the program that you are developing. And I think with some of the early visualization tools that we have and some of our basic services that we provide, we enable you to see these designs at the front end. One of the things that I'll touch a little bit on in terms of the technology is we're very technology savvy. And our goal here is to put as much information in front of you, the board, the community, before there's ever a piece of dirt moved. And part of that is because at that point, that's how we build momentum and get the families excited about this wonderful opportunity that you all have here. And with some of this technology, we're a BIM firm in the sense that we use modeling, 3D modeling. So from the get-go, we're developing a 3D model of what it is that we're building. So any future animation or interior views or anything that we feel is appropriate for you to present to your constituents is what we're able to do very quickly as part of our service. And I think that's what separates us from the competition is our technology edge. We take pride in a lot of the collision detections, or in addition to what Al was talking about, the peer review, we take pride in making sure that our documents eliminate any conflict. And as you all know, is those things on the field save you dollar and time. And in addition to that, the design aspect, we're a very successful design firm, and we take design to heart. We all jumped into architecture because we love design, and we love to get everybody excited, and we want people to, mixing their feet, the space, what the community is about. And I think from that perspective, those are the elements that follow retention partnership, bring to the table.
And as far as changing the community and adding to the community, I grew up in this area, not in Canutillo, but in El Paso, and I've experienced the growth that Canutillo has had. And from its inception, we've helped Canutillo, develop and grow. I think in one of our major projects, which we feature there, the high school, we're very proud of it. And, we experienced the community embracing design. And I think one of the biggest things that we offer as a firm is that we try to keep up with all the nuances and education and trends and education, and we try to make sure that we try to incorporate that into our design. And it's one of those resources. I mean, we don't really have to memorize everything, but as long as we know where to go after and look for the resources, we're there.
One quick item, last time we have a director of design that we imported in from New York because of the aesthetics and the quality of product that we as a firm feel we need to deliver to our clients, and we can make this commitment to you is that Al and I will be here. You award us the project from the moment you give us the opportunity to the moment we turn the keys over. Al and I will be the people that you will deal with from day to day, on a day-to-day basis. But in addition to that, I will ensure you that the Director of Design spends ample time here getting to know your community and making sure that the architecture has a vernacular feeling to it that will be embraced by the community.
Okay, let's go to question three.
As far as question three, it's we made a very conscious decision to make sure that we design green from the get-go. Whether our clients say they want it or not, we do it, because I think it's our responsibility as architects to make sure that our designs are sustainable. We have a director of design, and we're probably the only one of the few firms that do that. And all he does is ensure that our projects, whether it's their specifications, the design selection of materials, processes, they are green and they do follow the lead products or lead principles.
We just recently finished a project at Texas A&M that was certified gold. And that kind of has been our signature project. Everybody's talking the product about going green. But I can tell you, we live it, we do it on a daily basis.
And from our end, it doesn't cost any more money. It's something that we do as a firm already, and it's worked into everyday life that we do. So it's not something that we have to go out and try to hire a consultant or try to charge money and try and figure out how we're going to work it into our budget. It's already a part of what we do. It's just like us producing drawings on Revit, which is BIM, Building Information Modeling. We do it. It's all we do. So it's not, and our firm's been doing it for 5 years, so it's not something that we are all of a sudden taking up because it's a new fad. We've been doing it. Our BIM actually is loaned by Revit to their deals to let them tell them how things that we found out and corrected, and we have our own library. So it's not, like I said, it's another one of those things that we don't have a learning curve on. And through LEED, we're able to ensure that all those items are incorporated. And if the client decides that you want to follow LEED in this, at whatever stage of the game, we're there. We can do it and commission and do the whole thing.
Could you address the Caudill Award?
Oh, the Caudill Award. Well, we currently don't have any projects that have won the award. We have had projects that have been given the NASB, TASB awards. We were awarded in San Francisco. We had two projects that were awarded back when it was in San Francisco, but we haven't had any awarded recently. But we are more than willing. Our pride is your projects, and we are not the kind of architects that try and take a project and call it our own. I mean, it is your project, and we don't have a big ego. Whatever we need to do to get you where you need to be, we'll do it.
Okay, Pam, let's go to question four.
Excuse me, gentlemen, you have about 10 minutes.
Okay.
think that that through, you know, one of the major things in designing the school, pre-K through 8, we've done several of those schools. And one of the things that we got to ensure is a separation of certain grades, because certain kids cannot intermix with other kids. Where the bus drops off the kids, for example, the younger kids, we always try and ensure that that area is closer to the gym, cafetorium area, so that the kids are, in the winter times or bad weather areas, they have a place to go. They're more secure. They're seen better by the faculty. The older kids are a different wing. We always try and separate. Also, one of the tactics that we've used is the media center of the library, those areas, try and separate the older kids from the younger kids through that, and somehow incorporate the administration buildings there and those areas, so that the intermixing of grades don't occur and the kids don't intimidate the younger kids. And also in the playground areas, also how you site the building and where you locate the play areas for the older kids and the younger kids, and certain visual, you know, have some sight lines so that everybody can oversee the kids or see the, you know, the playground. I think it's very important.
Okay, and
the next item, you know, as I mentioned to you earlier, we take design very seriously because we feel it's a melting pot of ideas, both on the architecture side as well as the community. The ironic part of our director of design is that he was a former educator. He graduated from Texas State University and was a teacher, a school teacher, for many years before deciding that architecture was his calling. So we have that benefit in that he's been on both sides of the street, which I think would bring an added value to your project, especially on the inside of the education piece.
On the construction manager at risk question, I believe that's where we're at.
Yes.
We've done several projects in construction manager at risk. The last school project that we did, CR at risk, was with VMAC, and that went very, it was a very successful project. It went very smoothly. It was also the reason why we selected to, or were selected to do that project, is we had a lot of experience in the thin shell, tilt-up panel type. And I grew up designing tilt-up, oddly enough, but that's what my dad did for a living. But so we have a lot of experience in that. And if you've never done a project, or it's not a construction manager at risk, it's like shooting in the dark, because a lot of, you know, you have to be aware of the bid packages and how they're separated and what, so that there is no overlap. And to ensure that your bidders and your subcontractors are bidding the packages complete and not overbidding or underbidding the packages. And the way you control that design and the formulation of those projects and those bid packages is very, very important.
One of the interesting things on here is specifically affect your program. I don't believe that a quality CMR and a quality architect should have any conflict. If anything, those two components need to work hand in hand to ensure that the owner's getting the best value for their dollar. You know, it's a collaborative process. It's one that I think we've had vast experience in, both here in El Paso and in Houston, and one that we embrace. You know, and I think our approach has always been a team approach, and I think that's what separates us from the competition.
On the last one, you know, obviously, you know, we really want to do the pre-K through 8 school, and that's our goal. And we are a firm that we can handle any size of project or as many projects as you can throw at us. You know, we'd like to do all your work, and we'd be more than happy to do all the work if that's what you want. And as far as scheduling, we have the staff, we have the partners available to do all the work, and in fact set up teams to handle each one of the projects individually or as a group.
You know, one of the interesting things about our firm is that, you know, our portfolio shows a vast series of projects from, you know, $3 million project to $120 million project. But I can tell you that the $120 million projects are not the norm, they're more the exception. And I think our wheelhouse is the smaller projects. $3 million to, you know, $20 million. And we can do those all day, and I think we're geared for that. You know, I think that's what Dimension Partnership is about, and I think we want to keep it that way because it enables us to be intimate with the users, with our clients, and with the process. And I think that's key to the current success that we've had, both as Dimensions Partnership and as a mothership as well.
With that, y'all have right about 4 minutes. Would you like to tell us anything else?
Anything that we just rushed through?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think is, and I think, you know, pardon me if I seem too forward, but one of the things that I, as an architect working in El Paso, have learned now, you know, through experience and being afforded the opportunity to go and gain other experience out of the cities and like Houston, Dallas, and learn the resource and all that resources that are available to me. You know, one of the things that we have as a company, we have a proprietary program management system that's called ProjectStream. Your facilities director will be able to use that. This is an amazing tool because everybody will have their own password access. You can see the project as it's being developed, all the incoming RFIs, all the shop drawings, everything that goes through there. A shop drawing process usually takes, you know, people hand carry it, take it to an office, they process, take it to another office, but it takes several weeks to get back. The way we do it, it's all done electronically through the project ProjectStream. It's done in a couple of days because it's very fast the way it's done.
Well, what it does is it holds more than anything, it holds the team accountable. Because ultimately, we have to be accountable to somebody, which is the board and our clients. And if it gives you a real time snapshot whether we're doing our job and if we're not doing our job.
And at the end of the project, you get a DVD with all the information from the drawing, shop drawing, logs, everything is on a magnetic disc. And that is yours, even the whole construction document. And you will have access to that. You know, the thing that, like, in BIM, one of the things that we do, and you can see it right there, it picks out the minute complex resolutions. It highlights them, turns them red, and says, you've got a problem here. You know, there's beams going through this wall. You cannot have that. So those are things that get resolved, and they get resolved early enough through design process where it should be resolved, and not during out in the construction field where it's really
costs money and
costs time and people to get over there and try and answer a question. All that is resolved during the design process, not at the construction site.
Board members, Dr. Murphy, does anybody have any questions?
Just questions. Rachel? Monica?
No.
Armando?
No questions.
Cassie?
I do have a question. What do y'all feel of the feasibility of now in terms of using solar for a school such as this, the PK through 8, and is that at the point that it's feasible for us to use in terms of the...
There is certain components in solar that are borderline feasible. I think that I don't know too much about it. I was hoping that I could bring more people in and I could bring out Andy, but one of the things that I've been told is that if you could spend a lot more money right now, do it, and it does, the payback is, you know, it takes a lot of years to get the payback, but a lot of companies are doing it more for because it's the right thing to do. It may cost a little bit more money to do, but I think it's the right thing to do a lot. So that's the reason why they do it. And I think it in the next, maybe it's not there yet, but I think in the next 5 to 10 years, it'll turn the corner and it'll really be efficient. I think they're working hard at it to try and make those components as efficient for production, cost, implementation. But I don't think it's all there.
Now, you know, have you all considered a geothermal? Because that may be an opportunity that right now is, you know, being done at multiple locations. And
we did this high school with geothermal.
It's a little more feasible to do that as well. So, you know, that compounds the guidance to the solar piece of it as well. Mm-hmm.
It just can't be done by itself. It has to be done with other things.
Okay. And we're at our time limit, gentlemen. We thank you so much for presenting to us tonight, for bringing your papers and your knowledge, and we very much appreciate it. Yes.
We've got one last parting gift. Everybody's doing your book. This is our close on presentation. Part of that is we try to stay as green, and we are true to being green. So if you get a moment, please plug it into your PC.
And we're a carry on.
And that way you can look at it. You know, and if the presentation is dull, then just delete it and use it for something.
We didn't get one.
I think everybody's got one here.
Yes.
Dr. Murphy.
I like the one in blue colors.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
Can we take another one?
Maybe that
yes.
one. I think we did it all.
Yes.
Just signed all on except
yes.
that one.
It's just now. So it was this then?
What?
This is that.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And Dr. Murphy, the next group will be coming right
yes, we have one more and then a break.
One more and then
a break. Are you making a decision today or?
Okay.
Ms. Earl, she's asking if we're making a decision.
God willing.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Pray.
Can we push? What did you see?
She's
seeing.
Oh, just that.
She's seeing.
Yeah.
What is the question? The fellow. Where is
it?
Rip it, I will hit you.
I see your fist too.
Just kidding.
This thing is to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should come with like the little wrist thing.
I did too.
Okay.
Come on in. Damon Murphy, superintendent.
Good evening.
How's everybody?
Good evening.
Hi, I'm sorry. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet
you. Come on, brother.
Good evening. Pleasure, Mari Sarah. Good evening. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for introducing yourselves. We are on a time schedule this evening, as you know. We have allotted 20 minutes. There's a paper in front of you, right on the table. There's 7 questions on that paper. We'll give you, you know, about 3 or 4 minutes to look over the questions, and with that, you'll have 20 minutes to answer, and then we'll have 10 minutes to question you. And you may see me, I don't mean to be rude, but with respect of time, give you the...
That's okay.
Or just interrupt you, okay?
Sure.
Thank you.
Please don't write on the sheet, write on your tablet.
Okay, do you feel ready to?
I think so.
We've got the timer rolling. Thank you so much. First question?
The first question about what sets us apart from the other architectural firms in El Paso. I know that everybody really relatively has a lot of experience doing schools. I think what sets us apart from everybody else is that we are a multidisciplinary firm, which means that we have all kinds of engineers on board. We have architects, we have engineers, we have mechanical, electrical, plumbing, structural, landscape architects, interior design, you name it, we have it in staff. Excuse me. So just the opportunity to be able to work with everybody and collaborate on a day-to-day basis, it's one of the very important things. And nobody else in El Paso can really tell you that they have that. So.
Yes, and just elaborating a little bit more on that, we're working out the same BIM model, building information modeling, that where everybody has somebody updates a certain element of the building, everybody else is immediately impacted and sees that change. Another item that I believe sets us apart is the fact that we've been involved with 21st century learning environments. We're one of 6 firms in the nation selected to develop the educational specs for schools worldwide, and you know, we actually, not only that, but we're actually starting a high school in Vicenza, Italy, for DODIA, the Department of Defense, and with that, you know, they're really changing. It's a game changer, really going ahead and promoting the 21st century environment, collaborative learning, team teaching, very adaptable, flexible spaces, cozy, comfortable, not just, you know, physically, but psychologically, very transparent, all those type of trends that you're seeing. So I think I'm going to stop there. So.
And we can go on and on about this question. So during the last 10 minutes, we'd love to elaborate more about it, because we had like 6 or 7 points in case this question came out. So we're ready. And then the second question, will you read it to us, or do we just
go? You just go ahead. Over time, we figured your answer is worth more than the question.
Okay, thank you. about architecture and changing the community. As far as we're concerned, you know, this is what we do on a daily basis. We build community. That's really our motto for Park Hill, Smith & Cooper. And so we are really leaders in the design, trying to implement good design on every single building that we work on. Regarding school architecture, we have studios, and the way that our office is broken up, we have different studios. We've got all the engineering studios, but under the architectural studios, we are broken up into different
sectors,
which is K through 12, we have higher education, we have government. Well, we have a couple more. We have
community
practice as well, religious and government. So under the K through 12 studios, we have three studios. The local El Paso firm has one of those three K through 12 studios. So we have great experience working with the different districts in El Paso. And let's see. We can talk about
metrics. Well, as far as, you know, not only are we passionate when we're designing, we're passionate about affecting the learning environment. I'm currently the chair for Education and Workforce Division for Chamber of Commerce. So I've been involved with that over 6 years and just learned a lot through all the involvement that we do. So even going back to college, when talking about education with my college roommate, I've been passionate about this, and that's why we have my studio as K-12 student. That's 10 people that mainly focus on educational. And by being focused on educational projects, we're able to really develop an expertise. Right now, we've been involved in an initiative internally. We call it SOFIA, School of the Future through Intelligent Architecture. And we just, you know, been developing papers where we have staff put together a presentation for all the K-12 sector. We join together through a webinar and continually improve the expertise of all our staff, from interns, architects, project managers, principals, so that everybody's sharing knowledge of best practices. And I guess one example would be the ninth grade center that we designed for the Socorro Independent School District. That was a very unique project that we really looked at the, obviously, the grade being ninth, and that transition that's very hard for students to have gone from eighth grade and then before really going into high school. Obviously, that's a temporary thing because they do plan on making it a full high school, but it was a very unique experience for us to design that school for them and make it very adaptable to their needs, and also being able to design it in a way they can easily expand it to a full high school. We designed that to be sustainable. They looked at possibly certifying it for LEED, but then once we had designed it for meeting LEED, but once they saw the proposal from the commission agent, which was $200+ just to go and verify that all the systems were operational, they decided not to go ahead and certify it. So we went ahead and said, that's fine, we're here for the best interest of the district, whether you want a LEED certified building or whether you just want a sustainable, energy conscious design. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The third question goes into smart growth and neighborhood friendly design. Also, you all want to win the statewide Padilla Award for School of Architecture. I think that's an excellent goal to have, and I think we can help you with that. In the last, year and a half, two of our projects actually got Caudill Merit Awards. One of them was the School of the Culinary School, El Paso Community College, and the other one was Lubbock Performing Arts. I think it was this
auditorium.
I'm sorry, for one of the high schools. We would look at the six different categories and really assure that we have an award-winning school based on those six categories. Those six categories are the ones that really lead, the project to actually be, what is the word I'm thinking of? oh my God, I'm sorry, I drew a blank. That is able to even meet those requirements to be.
It's pretty much you have to plan. If you're really wanting to go for that goal, from the very beginning, you look at those criteria so that you're working towards meeting those, right, that criteria.
I'll think of that word when I'm asleep tonight. I'm sorry. On question number four, Hector and I both have experience working on combination schools. I worked on the Ituarte and Hernando School for Socorro Independent School District.
And I worked on Bill Seibert, which that's the school my daughter goes to, so I'm intimately familiar with the issues that are in the K through 8th grade school. And also worked on the DWP Chavez and Malwood Middle firm previously. So I know the, and actually, not just the separation of your K through 5th grade and your middle school kids, but actually K1 and 2, and 2, 3, and 4 possibly are also sort of a separation that you can also consider. Then along the lines also, on 6th, 7th, and 8th, you should also look at possibility of containing them in the houses so that they have a small learning community within their grade. That, and if you're considering team teaching, that's, excellent way of having those houses, as we refer them.
And I think although you want that separation between them, I think that there's an opportunity to have some spaces that they're able to share and kind of collaborate with one another. I think one of the very important things and opportunities that you have when you have a school like this is be able for the older kids to teach the younger kids. Sometimes it's by visual, maybe it's by a certain window located in a certain classroom that the little ones can look in and see the older kids do experiments with science. So that's just an example of something that can be incorporated into the school, and maybe not just truly separating them, but maybe bringing them together.
Yes. And then number five, briefly describe your philosophy and practice related to design programming. Obviously, we have one of the things that the reason why we have 85% repeat clients is the fact that we effectively listen and respond appropriately to the needs of our clients. That is an unheard of percentage, if you all don't know. And once we get our foot in the door with the client, we're there. And I think in programming, it's a lot about listening, really listening and really clarifying what your needs are. We have done extensive programming documents that we're able to produce a programming document for this.
And we take everything extremely personal because I think we try really hard to identify with what the students' needs are, with what the teacher's needs are, with what the staff needs are. So listening to everything, making sure that we really look at how we implement all those ideas and if they're possible to implement. But taking it personally, I think it's the very first thing that we want to do.
And number six, the district is choosing a instruction manager at risk model in the building of our pre-K through 8th grade school. Please detail your thoughts, experience regarding this method. How would this affect your program design?
We just did have
experience. Our group here designed 4 new elementary schools for Big Spring ISD. They're roughly about $10.1 million each, 70,000 square feet. We used the construction manager at risk. And,
your construction
right now, they're about 50% into construction. Recently went, just visited. I'm not in charge of the construction administration. Somebody from our Midland office who was involved in the project as well is doing that. But one of the things that I think also sets us apart is the fact that we're very skilled and knowledgeable about cost. We don't take the contractor manager at risk number, GMP, guaranteed maximum price, at face value. We scrutinize it, and we have in the past been able to, hey, no, this is out of line, get it down. And one recent example was Seminole Primary School, where we saw Division 4 and Division 11
They're a little padded.
Yeah, let me show you something real quick.
Yeah. But we need to be able to recognize that that division, that certain division is a little bit higher than the norm. Right. And so when that happens, we right away are able to pinpoint that.
I think this is, has brought tremendous value to many of our clients. We trademarked cost signature. And we have the curves that you see at the bottom are separate different schools. BS, ES is a Big Spring Elementary School, Seminole Primary and Seminole High School. And then once we look at that and we see that there's something that just out of line, we're able to concentrate on that and see, okay, why is it? And we can scrutinize those numbers. And at that particular case, we got the construction manager to reduce their GMP and meet budget. And you know, we're, in addition to that, we're also a team player with them. I mean, we are working with them and helping them get familiar, their subcontractors familiar with the projects so that they can bid it appropriately so that they're not, you know, they don't default. And I think that covers it pretty much. Our RFQ also called for architecture related to smaller projects such as the gym and the band hall, district-wide HVAC project, and other significant renovations construction.
Which coincidentally, we just did that with the Big Spring too.
Yeah.
With Big Spring, we were able to work on the four elementary schools, and then there was also the high school that needed exactly this, which was the band hall. And then the junior high needed a lot of repairs. So we really were able to work with the district and do all their, it's a small district, but you know, all their schools at the same time.
Essentially, we helped them from the very beginning. We held their hand through bond planning, bond election. They selected us, they passed the $60 million bond, and we're doing all their work. We've already finished the four schools in design in March. The high school renovation, which just finished last Friday. Two of my members from here were involved with that. And then junior high has already been done. I think only one project is left, Kentwood, and some district-wide improvements to parking lots. So the fact that the economy went down, we were able to sort of spread the work and get done a lot faster for them than they expected. You know, they expected to last about 3 or 4 years. Essentially, their work is going to be done in about 2 years.
And a lot of our work is renovation and construction, so we're very familiar with that. As far as the district-wide HVAC projects, we have very knowledgeable staff, and they're in-house. So that's a great thing. You get an architect and you get an engineer at the same time.
Additionally, I think, I don't know if you got a chance to look at the statement of qualifications. One of the things I noticed that is that you have the project separated and for the high school, for the middle school, and I mentioned some of the advantages of going ahead and combining that into one package. Because if you have it separate and you award it separately to architects and or contractors, then you have multiple costs, whether it's mobilization, whether it's overhead, and permits, and let's take for example, you have two or three landscape architects from different firms. Well, you know, one landscape architect needs to do all the calculations for that site because of the square footage that's added to at each component, whether it's gymnasium, classrooms, and once, if multiple architects do that, then there's going to be a variation. You might have more than what you need because of that. I know one example of at Del Valle High School, we were selected to do the fine arts addition. Somebody else was selected to do the field house, and another architect was selected to do the science. Well, there's two fire lanes that are essentially 10 feet apart because obviously, when we went for our permit, we had to have a fire lane, and then Fieldhouse, architects a few months later also had to have a fire lane design, and we tried to coordinate so that we can, but we couldn't because they were separate permits. separate timelines, and permits would not be approved unless, unless they went through.
It would have been easier and less expensive. It would have been coordinated. You essentially would have ended up with one road instead of two completely separate roads.
Right, if one architect had been selected. And then again, you have three, the impact of their construction area where they have their trailer, you already have quite a bit of space taken up. And then by having taken up by three separate contractors, it's unmanageable to control. And the fact that, if the administration had to deal with one architect or one construction manager, then they have a whole lot easier process than trying to deal, who do I need to see about this, shutting down the water and electricity, or just coordinating general procedures and access. That's one of the things.
And I think the less contractors that you have on site, because you are a school district, the better. You really don't want to have three different general contractors with all their subcontractors at a certain school site. It's a security thing. I think it become a little bit of a higher security risk.
Yes.
I think that takes you perfectly. You probably have seconds. You did a great job on the 20 minutes.
Yeah,
you win. 20 minutes.
Thank you. We were actually discussing on our way over here. Okay. Hopefully we know how many questions there is so we can
engage
it.
And with that now, we'll start the 10 minutes of questions. Rachel?
I don't know.
Monica?
No. You found us just perfect?
Armasa?
You all are tired.
I do have a question. How do you feel about the feasibility of solar incorporating that into the new... It's in the PK through 8 school that we're considering in Zion. Is it feasible at this time under the...
Do you mean like a photovoltaic system?
Solar.
Yeah.
Panels.
Okay. Well, the reason I say solar is because, there's the difference between active solar and passive.
Right.
And so what we do for every project that we do is really take advantage of daylighting. I mean, that's a given. So with photovoltaics, I think what we found is that our firm does have experience doing it. I think the return on the dollar for it is really, it's not really feasible at this time. I mean, you do get with El Paso Electric, you get some rebates, but I think just the initial investment is very, very high. So by the time you get some return on that investment, it'll be 20, 30 years is what our studies, I think, have shown.
Yeah.
So
currently, the rate structure that El Paso Electric Company has, it's not really conducive. However, in actually, another thing that sets us apart is the fact that we have an energy model in our company. And in the statement of qualifications, we had a verbiage about, before considering renewable energy, such as, photovoltaics, there's a lot of other things that we can incorporate before we need to think about renewable energy. Building envelope, daylighting, roof system, a cool roof system, shading devices that have a whole lot higher impact for a lot more lower cost. Photovoltaic panels are still very expensive. I know there's a school that I know of that it was nearly $3 million just for photovoltaic panels. Obviously, that school was, its goal was net zero. No use of, they incorporated a geothermal system. That's actually something that, could be considered. But, my energy model engineer gave me a little spreadsheet that, if you look at envelope, fenestration, mechanical systems, and lighting, going from a T12 lamp to a T8 lamp, you're looking at about a little under 12% savings in the energy cost. And, we have a table where you look at single pane or double pane versus double or triple pane, you're looking at 4% cost or 3% or 2% reduction in energy cost. So we're very versed and energy conservation, things that we can incorporate into design without having to go into the more expensive things like photovoltaic panels.
And just, you're talking about that, because I went back and I started reading the question. I think I went straight to the Caudill Award, but they wanted a team recognition. And so for us, I mean, that's, we have 11 LEED accredited professionals on staff. And so we've done even our own building in the middle of the office, the Cardenas building is a LEED certified building. We have a green roof on that building. So we try to kind of practice what we preach.
Just the fact that, you know, obviously LEED is a tool. Overall, you know, it's being sustainable, being energy conscious is what we strive for. And we can do LEED, and we've done LEED for with other schools, Gateway Boards School, and other schools that obviously our region typically has not pursued LEED certification, but they've had us do LEED Spirit, what essentially meet the points, meet the criteria, but they don't want to go through the certification.
Because of the high dollar?
Because of the documentation and the commissioning cost of it. A lot of times, and we found that and through our research, a lot of times actually the materials that we select and incorporate are not much hard, actually, if you're careful selection. But then the commission and the paperwork and all that, that's what
drives the cost.
It will add to your schedule time, too, because that's during the design process and during the construction process. So everything just gets pushed a little bit more when you do it.
And that's because, you know, of USGBC. Mm-hmm. You know, we submit things and sometimes we don't hear back for months.
And the USGBC is?
United States Green Building Council.
Okay, thank you. That's
which is the one that gives you the certification.
Certification for me.
So there's a time lapse in terms of this verification
right.
that they do for
yeah.
your,
yeah.
and you can't proceed until.
Right. It's like when you send a permit to the city, well, you have to wait and be patient until you get it approved. It's the same thing with USGBC.
Yeah, and a lot of times, obviously, it doesn't hold up the design, but it holds up the certification. I mean, it takes, you know, a year, year and a half, 2 years to get certification.
Okay. We're at time.
Okay.
And we thank you so much. It's an excellent presentation.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And the word I couldn't think of is qualify.
Right. That would qualify.
You'll be able to
sleep
now.
We brought just more brochures just
perfect.
For with history, some recent projects, and resumes.
Please pass them or just hand them to Dr. Murphy. He could pass them out. Yes.
And thank you all for your time, buddy.
And we appreciate you coming tonight.
And also just share with you some verbiage about 21st century.
In
our involvement with the worldwide expats. Thank you again.
Thank
appreciate
you again.
It.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You guys, 15-minute break. 15-minute break.
Okay. Break.
Can we recess for that?
Yes, we'd like to take.